Welcome back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast, and I'm your host, Jerry Alexander. This show is all about helping you into the world of commercial property. It can be a thoroughly rewarding place, but sometimes it can teach you a lot of lessons. We've been investing in commercial property for over 15 years, and I want to help you by sharing some of the things this industry's taught us, and of course the lessons learnt by our great guests. Personally, one of the super benefits of creating this podcast is I've been so lucky to be able to interview some really interesting and successful investors, and today is no exception. Chris van der Kyle and his lifelong friend Paddy Burns are very well known in gaming circles for their business 4J Studios, which is based in Dundee, and for the work that they've done over many years bringing the Minecraft franchise to millions of people. They ventured into other businesses and opportunities, including commercial property, and Chris explains why it was such a natural step for them. He also shares some great insights into how and why they developed a 19th century warehouse on the waterfront in Dundee into a state-of-the-art multi-let workspace. And although, as Chris admits in the interview, that finance for this project wasn't such an issue for them, there were still plenty of obstacles to overcome. We have also invested into a building on the waterfront in Dundee, so we take a bit of time to talk about why we feel Dundee is such a great place to invest and what their plans are for the next project. There are, of course, not just tips for investing in commercial property here, but also a good dose of business success nuggets that I'm sure you will also enjoy. So let's listen to the interview with Chris van der Kyle as he shares his experiences of commercial property so far. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris, today. It's an absolute pleasure to get a chance to talk to you about both the commercial but also your other business interests. And our audience are private investors generally who are looking at getting started in commercial. They generally have residential investments or some other business interests, and they're looking to build, I guess, their long-term asset base by investing in commercial stuff. And you've been doing such an interesting project. We've both been working on stuff in Dundee, so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. But first of all, could you maybe give us a quick introduction, Chris, to where you are right now? Because your life is always so busy. If anyone follows you on social media, it's like you're doing a million things. So we all want to know the secret to that. But just where are you at right now? What's the sort of main projects you're working on?
As usual, Jerry, we've got a fairly broad sphere of interest, with a Chroma hat on, Chroma Ventures being our investment arm, for Paddy and I and 4J Studios. Really, we took a decision a long time ago to start to spread our wings a bit and not just be in video games. But at the same time, we still love video games. It's still our principal area of interest. So we're investing a lot of time in 4J and also Puny Astronaut and Stormcloud, two businesses that we've invested in over the past few years, and really starting to think about what we do next with those businesses in terms of new games coming out and things, etc. And that's, I'd almost refer to that as that's the knitting. That's what you'd expect us to do. Beyond that, it's got, I suppose, very diverse very quickly, but there's a thread through everything we do. The number one thing is people and culture. We love investing in teams where we think the people are a bit different. They bring something new to the market that they're trying to operate in. And we hope that we can sort of add a bit of value to them, in terms of reflecting our entrepreneurial journey and helping them probably not make all the same mistakes that we did. And in the middle of all of that, as you kind of previously mentioned, through Chroma Developments, we took our first baby steps into commercial property development with our Water's Edge development in Dundee. And that's been brilliant, and we'll talk about that more, I'm sure. But that certainly whetted our appetite to do more in the area of property development, commercial development especially.
Brilliant. We will definitely get into that. It's a beautiful project, and for some, it definitely wouldn't be a baby step, Chris, because it's a large. Can you remember what the overall square footage is?
It's about 30,000 square feet, I think. In the whole building, but we, in terms of lettable, but we, you're right. In the, it's not really a baby step. I didn't mean to be facetious in saying that, but it was. the way we found ourselves in it, I suppose, is quite interesting in that we were sitting along City Quay in Dundee, not far from where we are now in Water's Edge, and just thinking, yeah, we've sort of outgrown this building and the building that we're in, in terms of it being fit for purpose and being the right headquarters for 4G. And when we went out and looked at the market to see where we could move to, there was just nothing that really suited the criteria that we wanted. So we went out to try and acquire some place to develop ourselves. And I don't think we wanted anything bigger than maybe we'd have stretched about 4,000 or 5,000 square feet tops. Yeah. And when we went out to look for something to do, again, there was nothing in that kind of area to buy either. So we spoke to a few of our friends and our old friend Tim. from Unicorn, Tim Allen, said, "No, I've not got anything that size, Chris, but I've got this shed left along the waterfront. We've got plans and permission to do something with it. It's a lot bigger, but maybe why don't you have a look at it?" And when we did, I think what we saw that day was a vision where we could see a great home for 4G, but we realized it was far, far too big. And the gamble we took that day was, we think we can create something multi-occupancy, but a bit different. And it would be the building we would bite our right arm off to be in. So if we'd bite our right arm off to be in it, surely other people would. And it was sort of from that naive assertion that we took the plunge and went for it.
Okay, so getting into this wasn't really, when I say this, I mean in terms of actually becoming a landlord, it was really first and foremost to find a home for you guys.
It was definitely that case. You know, we were looking for a home for ourselves with nothing else. And when I say nothing else, we've got quite interesting criteria that we didn't believe were unique, but the market didn't really recognize, which is we wanted a development with, let's call it character. It doesn't have to be an old building, but not just a straight steel box that you find on every property investor's wish list, it would seem, or certainly institutional property investor's wish list. And the Dundee market had told the property investment world and all the clients that it didn't need a good M&E, for example, or top-grade M&E. That was something which only companies in Edinburgh and beyond would pay for, said the market. And we said, well, that's entirely wrong. We want a building that doesn't look like those buildings in St Andrew's Square, probably, in Edinburgh, but actually has all the amenity and facility that they have, because the one thing that drives us round the twist is poor cooling and heating. Over a 365-day cycle, you know, we'll fill a unit packed with a computer kit, in our case, and we might be needing to cool in the depths of winter. But similarly, if you're going to do real multi-occupancy, you want a building that can cope with that in one unit and the unit next door being two people and a laptop and needing to heat at the same time. And when we asked the M&E engineers what did that mean, you know, they dropped a very, very hefty bill on our desk or quotation on our desk. And I can see why probably most third-party developers at that point say, well, it doesn't really matter. That's not going to make a decision. We actually did the opposite. We sort of said, no, this is the wish list that we must have, and we're not going to compromise that. And we'll back calculate what that means we need to charge and rent from there on. And if that means, quite frankly, that we end up being the only tenant in a building, then we'll take that risk. And we're very lucky we could afford to take that risk. But we didn't think it was too high a risk, because we're not looking at the per square meter or per square foot charge. We were looking at the unit cost, and the unit cost on a, let's say, a monthly basis versus the affordability for the types of businesses we are and the types of businesses we thought could be there. And we quickly concluded, as it turned out, that the market was completely wrong in Dundee, and that we could charge probably the highest per square meter rate for commercial property in Dundee and fill a building. So that was the gamble we took.
Yeah, you really went all out for that, the conditioning of the building. And basically, you've taken this really architecturally beautiful building It was a shed, or it was part of a row of facilities there for the docks, and for, because obviously the city was preeminent for its docks and everything, and all the activity was going on there a century or so ago, and the building was quite dilapidated. I remember looking around it with Tim as well, and you just felt it had loads of character there to bring out. But to try and put all the modern kit you're talking about into this building was quite a challenge. And your architects and you guys have come up with a unique scenario there of bringing that outside, haven't you? I don't know if you could maybe explain to people how that actually happened, but it was a really interesting development.
Our architect, Rick Russell from Nicol Russell Studios, you know, and he's pretty well known for thinking out, literally out the box. And he talked to us about a few projects he'd worked on, not least of which, the old fish market in Glasgow, they'd done a very similar idea. They'd kind of used it as a shell and then built units. In that case, it was more sort of artist studios, a lower end product than we were trying to put together, but the concept was the same. And you know, then again, inspired by people like Richard Rogers and others, he sort of said, well, if we're going to fill this, rather than try and hide it in the 19th century roof space, why don't we just build a tower outside the building and put all the, all the 21st century facilities on show, and build it in as a feature to the building, which Paddy and I, loved the idea of doing that. The building quite proudly wears, its heritage on its sleeve, but also its modern heritage.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to do that sort of faux thing of hiding it and pretending that it's the original 19th century building.
Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
It was a transit shed, so purposely had incredibly drafty two sides to it where goods came in to one side and then exited the other, either to or from the water. So it was never really meant to be a wind and water tight, heated and cooled office environment. So we've effectively kept exoskeleton, we put a brand new roof on it because we had to, but with slate and traditional methods and lots of lead. But internally, the big listed feature is the sort of 19th century cast steel steelwork and trussing. It's got huge open spans in the building. But then everything else is effectively housed inside that building. So we created also a public street down the middle of it, and then all the units come off that street, which in and of itself kind of creates a community without that sort of false thing of saying we're creating a brand and we're going to make people have coffee on a Friday afternoon and do that. We just said, look, here's a street. It's a very Northern European climate friendly street, as in it's got doors on the end and a roof and no real drafts, but it's unheated space, the whole center street. And from this street, you'll enter and exit your offices. You'll enter and exit the sort of seven meeting rooms we've got and the shared facilities. And really from there, it does feel that way. So it feels like a sort of 21st century community that you would have found, 100 years ago in a high street in a city or otherwise, where quite like-minded businesses just happen to find themselves next door to each other, not because someone decided that's the only people they would let in the building.
Yeah. And how many units did you end up creating, Chris?
So it changes because, as per usual with these types of projects, we've already extended and expanded a bit, and we've got a little bit left to do. But at the moment, we've got down one side four sort of large scale units and it's quite interesting because I'll come back to this and talk about the density and how we design and obviously the current COVID challenges put a different light on that. But in a pre-COVID world, with these four big units that were really designed to house between, you know, let's say 25, 30 people up to 50 people. And then the smaller units down the other side, which are designed to house, let's say, up to 20 people, but still feel like reasonable places to inhabit if there's only a small handful of you. And we've expanded some of those since we've started just through due to demand. But we're talking about, you know, what would traditionally a tiny unit, an 85 square meter unit, and that lays out for about 20 people. Now, how we're able to do that is by taking all the effectively circulation spaces and non-lettable areas and making those communal. So your access street is shared between all of you, your bathroom units are shared between all of you, the meeting rooms, really, although some people choose to have them within their units, you buy them by the hour when you need them. So what that means is that that 85 square meter unit really has no dead space other than maybe a bit of a galley kitchen and one stairwell to a mezzanine. And that then lays out really comfortably, actually, for the kind of numbers we're talking about. We've got now eight units, eight of the smaller units and four of the bigger units. And then we've got an extension area that, again, pre-COVID, we were ready to go on an event space because we think that works really well with the businesses that we've got. But we've temporarily put that on hold until the market recovers a little bit. And we've temporarily let it to one of our clients as a you know, as a sort of a warehousing space for the moment. So it's used. And the good news coming to you on this podcast is that you know, as of today, the building is effectively fully let, although one unit is just going to become available, one of the smaller units, over the course of this year. But knowing the waiting list that we've had on it, that'll turn over pretty quickly. But the bigger units have taken a bit longer to go, and that's we're delighted that although we've not announced it yet, but the final big unit has now gone.
That's brilliant. And of course, you know, size depends on the type of market you're in, doesn't it? But those units you're talking about are not too different to some of the unit sizes that have been available in Dundee for a while, but it's offering a different product that you're talking about. And interestingly, if you, part of the challenge, of course, and I know Stuart does some of your work for you on that, is when you're talking to potential customers and they're trying to compare you on a square foot rate, it's as you say, you know, well, actually, our rate is this. However, you're not needing 2,000 square feet. You need 1,500 square feet or whatever it is because of the efficiencies you're talking about. And sometimes getting that value add across can be challenging. They've got to come and look at it. That's the main thing.
For sure. And I think not only look at it, Jerry, I think they probably have to talk to people who've lived it to believe, because, you know, again, a lot of the professional consultants that they'll bring in will tell them that it's wrong. You know, this just isn't possible. And then they'll talk to some of the existing tenants and hear their stories and hear them pretty much unanimously reflect its, you know, comments like, it's the best space I've ever worked in, and here's why. And especially on some of the smaller businesses, you know, when they take their keys from us, they literally have to worry about running their business. You know, they don't need to do a scintilla of facilities management, from obviously the obvious things like cleaning and maintenance is held centrally. But even things like walking into a building and saying, right, I need 100 megabits of synchronous internet. I'll have to go and negotiate with four suppliers and get wayleaves in place and all the hell. And when we turn around and say, well, what do you want it today or tomorrow? And, oh, by the way, if 100's not enough or that you find that's too much, just phone us up and we'll change, you know, change it up to, you know, anything up to 10 gigabits. And you can have that on a temporary basis if you need it. And the incredulity that you see, even on, you know, we've had large corporates in the building, like, you know, Scottish Power, for example, were a tenant for a while. And their corporate IT immediately came and said, no, that's not how corporate IT is done here. We'll need to bring our own in.
We need our own.
You can't come into the building then. And they said, what do you mean? They said, well, it's been provisioned this way, and here's how we supply it. And they said, what about security? And we said, well, let us tell you how we do security. And within one phone call, they kind of went, oh, this is brilliant. This actually saves us a lot of hassle as well, and is one less overhead that we need to put onto our, onto our manifest. And that might sound, of course, everybody does that. Actually, almost nobody does that. You know, even those that say they do supply central internet for buildings, very few that we've come across do it in the way that we do it. You know, we, for example, can provision if a broadcaster decided to move in tomorrow and do live 4K broadcasting, we can give them provisioning, you know, for that by the time they walk through the door. And that, again, is something that any developer we've talked about kind of lay that off and go, well, that's nothing to do with us. And in our view, that's everything to do with us, because no one that's trying to operate a 21st century business can rely on anything other than, you know, really high quality delivery of that. And by the way, it goes wrong. You know, things don't quite work, and you need to have the right level of service around that to be prepared for that. You know, so we brought a partner in really early who, rather than it be let's tender it out to the big guys, we looked for a local supplier who we could help them build their own business service, and they could help us build great service internally. And it's that idea that, you know, you take the keys to one of our offices and all you should be worrying about is delivering your own business. You shouldn't be worrying about anything beyond that, whether it be, you know, as simple as are the loos kept clean and provisioned, you know, to I need faster internet and I need it tomorrow. You know, that's something that we believe should be the building operator's responsibility in the 21st century.
Yeah, it's that whole marketplace is definitely growing. Most of the corporate commercial stuff, of course, is leased. And as you said before, you know, it's about the investment houses buying property or building them and then letting them out to clients on very long leases if they can get them. But that differentiator there is starting to blend a little bit more, and some of these guys are starting to develop out some of their own flexible offerings. But, you know, it's going to take them a long time to catch up. One of the interesting things you're talking about there is listening to, or hearing what the local market is telling you and hearing what the local agents are telling you, and sometimes those things are quite different, and having the gumption to make the step change and provide something different. And when I was looking at Dundee, because I've come from the outside coming into Dundee, and I wanted to talk to you about Dundee. So I spent quite a long time studying the market and looking for a building. In fact, it was about 3 or 4 years. I wasn't looking every day, but I was coming in fairly regularly, viewing properties and everything else, and thankfully managed to find one not too far away from you, which we've nearly finished as well. And I remember the agents telling me, you know, there's about... we're starting to get about £12 a square foot in Dundee now. And obviously we've both proven that that's, you know, a very small amount. But, you know, obviously there's extra charges, the costs in what we do. But nevertheless, you can definitely provide a product there that's quite different that the market is asking for. And it's funny how Dundee, I found myself, was a little bit behind in terms, not just in terms of the provision, but just how it thought about the market. And that meant that I think some companies maybe weren't moving to Dundee that could have done.
100%.
Now things have changed. I mean, a lot of our tenants that moved into our building, they're smaller units, but a lot of them are from outside the city coming in. So what's interesting about your business, particularly going back to your 4J, is you guys have stayed in Dundee and you've wanted to stay in Dundee. And, you know, you've been going for a long time, and during some of those times, others have come to Dundee and they've left and they've gone to Edinburgh and other locations. You guys said, no, we're staying here. You've seen something in Dundee. I think that's really starting to prove itself now. But what do you feel about investing in Dundee and keeping your businesses in Dundee? Is there something you can tell the listeners or other developers maybe that are looking at Dundee and think, actually, maybe we should be paying attention to this market? What's exciting you most about Dundee right now?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we clearly have done an unbelievable job in Dundee of attracting some fantastic marquee projects, the V&A being the current jewel in the crown. But as announced recently, you know, we've got the Eden project lined up to sort of bookend the town. I mean, the Eden project's going to be our neighbour in Water's Edge, and, you know, that will be coming. And when that comes, you know, you've got a central waterfront that really starts at the Discovery next to the V&A and, you know, connects all the way through to where we are. And that central waterfront area, I think, is incredibly special. So I encourage anybody to come in with big ambition for Dundee. I mean, if there's a problem at the moment, it's still it's still a lack of ambition and confidence, even probably locally, of it, you know, maybe in terms of commercial property, things it'll do. And I think you highlight a key point, and I hope we've gone some way to proving it's not the case, that when you don't settle for the ordinary, because, you know, pick a reason here, it's not Edinburgh and Glasgow, it's a bit peripheral, or could it really support it? Then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, where companies who have got ambition and want to be someplace that reflects them well, look at the provision of things like office or infrastructure and go, well, actually, I'd rather be somewhere else where it's better now that I'm going to be really successful. And that's something that we can't let happen, and we shouldn't let happen. You know, so we certainly have ambition to go beyond Water's Edge into new developments that are, you know, raise the bar even higher than we've done already. And, you know, we would welcome others to come in and do the same. I think at the moment there's a little bit too much reliance on we're not coming unless we've got a blue chip covenant from a large corporate or the government, whatever, and maybe we need to, you know, we need to tell the council or government they need to pitch in a little bit and help us make that happen. I think what I want to see developers who don't do that. You know, we've, as it stands, I would never say never, you know, had no support in that way to date. And it's not harmed the business, you know, at all. And in a funny kind of way, if you're over reliant on those on those kind of incentives, you end up with the age old problem that we've seen in things like technology parks, where they're fine while they last, and then when that layer of incentive goes away, you suddenly get you know, a bit of a white elephant thing going on. In saying that, I would want to point out, Jerry, and I think it's really important, Water's Edge would not be here today were it not for BPRA. You know, so, you know, those of, I'm sure, viewers to your podcast will know that BPRA was the tax incentive scheme to bring back, you know, commercial properties that had been disused for, I think it was over 12 months. Any improvements to those properties were fully allowable against income tax. Unfortunately, the shyster world of tax advisors, and not all tax advisors are shysters, I'd put that in there, but the ones that are, suddenly saw a scheme that they could exploit, and it's well publicised that the government ended up shutting down BPRA because of the many abuses that were there. Water's Edge was, I think, the perfect example of a scheme that would not have happened without it, in that Paddy and I were able to take a real risk and effectively spend too much money on what would have been much cheaper to do as a new build, but on bringing an old wrecked building back to life. So, you know, really the walls, although we needed to spend quite a lot of money on them, and the steel truss work were all that really you know, remained of the original building. And once you finally compensate with BPRA, we've sort of done okay. It's still a very expensive build, and one we're really proud and happy of, because I think it, you know, have that kind of longevity. And it's a shame to see that there's nothing like that around anymore, because it's going to be very difficult to see how somebody could do what we've done again and try and make some money out of it.
When did you start the project, Chris? Can you remind me?
You know,
maybe
we
17,
were...
17, something like that?
I was going to say 2017, Jerry. Yeah. I think that's what I mean. We've been open about 3 years now, you know, and so actually we must have started before that.
Yeah.
Because we had the building in planning and, you know, in various things for at least a couple of years before
ours.
Yeah,
and that's when the BPRA stopped, isn't it? Yeah, around about that time.
Maybe somebody else
will come in.
I think that's what I'd like to see is, you know, that's the kind of place where public money can really do well. You know, if it incentivizes people to bring areas back to life, you know, that otherwise wouldn't. And you know, it's always tough. I don't envy anyone the task of designing schemes that are going to work. But this one is certainly one that we would have worked if sort of high net worth salaries hadn't been going in and borrowing against the projects before they were even off the ground. You know, it was kind of built for what we did. Owner occupiers. You know, who were going to bring these things back to life and had no intent, you know, no intent of selling this thing on, you know, who, and, you know, one never says never, but that wasn't why we did it. We did it because it was a great place for us to operate out of, And we thought it would be a great place to try and build value for others too.
Fab. Right. So you guys have learned quite a lot from this project, though. And you're talking about future ones.
Yep.
So that's good.
Yep.
What kind of lessons did that one teach you? What sort of things are you going to take on for the next project, or are they going to maybe temper the next project?
Well, I think it taught us a lesson that we know absolutely nothing about commercial property development. Not that we thought we did going in. It was good enough. We knew we were quite naive. We probably didn't realise how naive we were. And indeed, as per usual with a lot of early stage entrepreneurial activities, if you weren't naive, you probably never would have done it and never would have got such a great result after it, out of it. So there's a little bit of us questions that, well, don't be scared to be a bit naive and do things differently and make mistakes, because out of those mistakes will ultimately come the vision's there, you'll potentially achieve something quite special. So because of that, we're eyes wide open as to what we do next. There are clearly things that we have learned from this and believe in about the size of units, the flexibility around it, some gambles we took that are definitely right that we'd carry forward to a new building. I don't think you're going to see us in the short term do giant floor plates for single occupiers. I think we'll be looking at making the multiple occupancy thing even better, but not trying to turn into WeWork. We've got a bit of co-working that operates well and is a good stepping stone for people. But we like the idea of having businesses that have their own identifiable space and that they're big enough to establish, proper early stage businesses in, rather than it just feeling like, doesn't feel like my office. It feels like I'm in WeWork's my brand, not Saturn Fluid Dynamics, one of our, they've got a great brand and it's the identity's there, and anybody walks in our building, sees them as a standalone business. So that kind of concept we like. We do like residential, but for us, it would make absolutely no sense to go toe-to-toe with anyone that's already a big established business in the residential space, because what can we do better than them at what they do? The answer is probably not a lot. So if we're going to do residential, again, we'll do it in a different way. We might combine it with commercial. We might come up with ideas that merge the two. We love the Dundee waterfront, so we've got nothing live at the moment, but we'd love to think about doing something of scale that's very, very different, because, if nobody else is going to come in from outside and do something, I think, unique and special beyond the public buildings that are there, then maybe we need to show the way. So all these things will float around and we'll look at, and that's all, that, by the way, doesn't need to be bounded to Dundee. We don't really have, we've never thought geographically about anything we do, other than if we go someplace and we like what they're doing, then why not? But we also recognise that local knowledge is important too. So we wouldn't just run in and say, oh, Amsterdam's a cool city, let's develop something there. We need to have some belief that we've got some value add, not because we overthink our own, our own importance or whatever. We've got no ego that says Croma coming to town or Paddy and I town means anything to anybody. We think we're the bottom rung of the ladder when it comes to property development, so we need to prove our own worth.
I think you bring a few unique talents there, Chris. You do yourself a bit of disservice. It's interesting though, because your market and our markets, we both work with sort of SMEs and business that are trying to grow, but our proposition is more around the 2-3, sometimes we have larger customers, but 2-3-4 person spaces. Whereas your positioning at the moment is for those larger spaces, but not with a corporate feel. It's quite an interesting section of the market, and it's not that well catered to, certainly not in Dundee, but there are other locations around that middle bit, that middle ground is not catered to well. And it's interesting you bring up WeWork, because they are talked about a lot as a co-working business, but they're not. What they really are is a serviced office business doing a rent-to-rent model with some co-working. It's just that the density is really high. But ultimately, they're doing a serviced office offering, but just under a different type of branding. But what you're talking about there is tackling a certain niche in the market and really giving them exactly what they need. But in buildings that are really quite different. I mean, would you consider building new, or do you like the grounding that historical buildings bring?
We definitely consider building new. I mean, without BPRA, as I say, if we were going to bring the Water's Edge concept to life, we'd probably have to do it in new build, because it's simply way too expensive to do to do what we did without any support funding. And new build doesn't need to be, you know, doesn't need to be characterless. I think that's the critical thing for us. I mean, good design is right at the heart of all of it. I mean, if we'd taken that building and done the cheapest thing, which would have been, I don't know, to drop the ceiling and build cellular units, it would have been dark, soulless, I would suggest, pretty awful place to be. And we just wouldn't want it to be in there ourselves. So we're never going to do that. And opening it up to the light, you know, creating the sort of indoor-outdoor feel that we've got through the street, and into it, it's what makes the building. It's what makes everybody, you know, there are people in the building who operate in rooms that don't actually have outside windows. The meeting rooms, some of them, especially over COVID, we've put them on lease to certain operations. And not one person that's been sort of working a full working day in one of those internal units ever kind of said to us on, you know, some of them extended, but some of them, you know, when their temporary home came to an end, it was, I'd come back here in a minute, not a, yeah, it was fine, but I missed having daylight, because they didn't. You know, there's daylight in the street, there's glimpses of the environment around them everywhere they look. And that's just incredibly clever design. And it's where the architects earn their money, or it's in some ways worth putting up with architects that have got vision that drives everybody to distraction a bit. Not saying ours did, but, if you did.
Cool. And just going back to those lessons, what is there anything else that you would highlight to somebody else that's maybe getting started? Just things that came out, maybe, well, you, I don't know if you used the word naive, but that stage when you don't have those blocks from previous baggage, you don't have the baggage from previous projects, and you're like, right, we're going at this afresh. Anything else you would suggest to people getting started?
Wow, Jerry, there's a list as long as my arm. I mean, project management, I think, is the biggest one. We now, for all the stuff we're doing, even though it's at the moment nothing is as individually big as Water's Edge is in progress right now. So even if it's fit out, even if it's this extension for our event space, and then feasibilities on new projects, we have an external project manager who is working on massive projects around the country and others. He's just amazing. So we will not do a project without him attached, because we need somebody at the fulcrum of that is at the top of their game. And it's not us. We think we know a bit about project management, how to do it, because we do it every day in lots of different fields. It's a different thing. And having someone that's in that fulcrum position that's got real up-to-date knowledge in terms of, what is state of the art when it comes to certain contractual relationships and, certain ways of working. Because we'll never know that, because we're only working on individual bits in isolation, and it's a total fool's game to believe you can save that money. I think unless you are that person yourself and you've been doing it all your life and you're amazing at it, I think you've got to have somebody in that position. And I don't think they necessarily look like somebody out of your local surveying company. It's a specialist skill and should be as such. So that's probably the most important change we've made in terms of all of the projects we look at now. And then beyond that, like we do in pretty much everything we ever get involved in, is don't be scared to ask stupid questions. Put yourself in the shoes of the occupier and say, okay, so is this going to work? When you, in an M&E spec, tell me this in a big, detailed, technical document, what does that actually mean on a daily basis? Will it do this? And will, because you suddenly say to people, does that mean I can have this temperature here and this temperature there? And they say, well, actually, I don't know, because that was downstream from me. So, well, can you go and find out? And then when they come back and tell you, actually, it's not really going to work the way you thought it was going to work, you suddenly get slightly bamboozled by how on earth did anybody think that was okay in the first place. And it's just a case of you'll never stop asking these questions and digging into it. And the more time you spend on that during the planning stages, the more time you'll not be disappointed and shouting at people when it's finished.
It's amazing, isn't it? You bring in experts to do certain things, whether it's, as you say, a specialist in a particular area of the build, or indeed perhaps even somebody who's doing valuations and things. And when you start asking those questions, you start to realize, actually, maybe I do know more than I thought I did, because these guys clearly haven't thought through what it's like for the customer. Yep. They're just thinking about this wonderful piece of kit or whatever it is, but sometimes they forget about the customer, don't they?
For sure. For sure.
Brilliant. Right. So if somebody was looking to invest in Dundee, is there anywhere you think they should be talking to in the city? Because I know you've got lots of connections in the city, Chris, lots of people you work with to support the city development. Is there a sort of certain areas they should be looking to or talking to?
Look, Dundee's very well set up. I mean, one of the legacies of the team that delivered the waterfront infrastructure and the V&A led by Mike Galloway is that Dundee is quite unusual in combining in the sort of role of head of city development or economic development, that classic economic development role, but also the sort of planning side, which traditionally people thought should always be in different silos because there could be conflict of interest. Actually, if it's managed well, they should absolutely not be in different silos because their interests are super aligned. And we've got that. I mean, the guy that's in that seat now is a guy called Robin Presswood. And certainly I'd recommend that anyone thinking about investing in Dundee puts Robin probably as the first call that they make, because the city does have a vision, and that vision goes right up to the leadership, the elected leadership of the council, as well as the as the unelected officers, and it means that things in our view happen much more quickly and much more flexibly in Dundee than almost any other market you'd see, albeit with the right firm hand of regulation and process that one would expect. So I'd go straight there, to be honest. And from there, it's then a case of, if you really want to get involved in Dundee and make things happen, then spend time here. Don't just try and fly in and wave your magic wand and say, I'm going to create an amazing building, without knowing anything about the city. I think you need somebody to come in and base somebody here, send somebody up early to meet the multifaceted community that's here, and develop your ideas from there rather than try and bring somebody else's idea to the city.
We've both got spaces they could rent for that, Chris. It's interesting because obviously I came into the city from outside, and I've found it really, really helpful from, as you say, from the very top, the council down, everybody seems to be on their same page. It's really, really encouraging. Robin came from Fife, didn't he? He was working Fife. I've worked with him over there as well. He's always been very encouraging, a great individual. So it's a great acquisition for the city. I have one more question for you, Chris, which is slightly off from commercial, but I need to ask you. I said it at the start, you have so many different things you're involved in. And it would just be interesting to know, what are some of the tips you can give to people who think they can't fit another project in? Because some of the things you're involved in all seem like full-time jobs, and there's many of them. How do you manage it all?
Look, it's the obvious thing, Jerry. It's team. You can do effectively an unlimited number of things as long as you've got an unlimited supply of great talent. So my job in most things is to, get involved early on, set the vision, get all our interests aligned in the right way, and then find the right people to go and deliver whatever it is we want to try and do. The only way you get time back is things drop off. And the way things are going for us at the moment, lots going well, and nothing looks like it's going to, be stopping anytime soon. So it's a constant battle to try and bring in fresh talent along the way and keep building that team. And at that point, the biggest learning for anybody in any sort of entrepreneurial venture is really being as self-reflective as you can to understand what it is you're good at. and then cope, keep those balls juggling when you have to, and, you know, keep them in the air, but as soon as possible, throw the balls that you're not very good at juggling to someone else that is, and crack on with something new. As many people around me will tell you, you know, I'm dangerous if I'm doing the same job for any length of time, probably more like three or 6 months. So you get me maximum enthusiasm and energy to move around the various projects we've got. And then the more diligent and smarter the folks and I come along behind me and just make sure stuff gets done. So it's not very complicated. That's the formula.
Yeah, they tidy up and ask you to get out of the way.
Exactly. And I try not to make too much of a mess in the first place, that's for sure.
Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Is there anywhere anybody can follow you on social media or anything?
Yeah, I'm reasonably sporadic, but at ChrisVDK on Twitter is probably best, or LinkedIn. I'll generally accept all LinkedIn requests from non-crazies that come my way. That's probably the two best things. I'll appear on other bits of social media, but you probably don't want to follow those. They would be the two I'd go for.
Brilliant. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure, Jerry. Thanks again.
I hope you found that interesting. I certainly loved that interview. I've known Chris for a number of years, and he's always generous with his time, giving support to those that want to grow their businesses, whatever sector they're in. So thanks again, Chris, for joining us and sharing some of your insights. For those of you that enjoyed the episode, it's just one of the many interviews that we carry out on the Commercial Property Investor podcast, so why don't you subscribe right now so future episodes will drop straight into your podcast app. This is actually our 80th episode, so there is a pretty big back catalogue there now with content for those of you that are really interested in getting into commercial property. It can bring some great hands-off passive income and the opportunity to grow your equity. There's a lot of disruption right now, which can, of course, lead to opportunity. If you enjoyed the episode, please feel free to share or indeed leave us a review. We love reviews. It helps lift the podcast and show it to more potential listeners on all the podcast platforms. If you want to find out any more about what we do, jump into the show notes. You'll pick up a link to our website, commercialpropertyinvestor.co.uk, where there's lots of free content and information on some of the services that we offer for those that are serious about getting into commercial property. We also have a private Facebook group where you can meet others who are just getting started and those with more experience. The link is also in the notes. So thanks for joining us on this week's episode of the Commercial Property Investor Podcast. My name's Jerry Alexander, and it's been a real pleasure. Have a fantastic week in commercial.